Welcome in, Brewers playoff preview, and I'm joining some masterminds here on the podcast. Welcome in on WTMJ, Brewers All Access, wherever you get your podcasts, ESPN Milwaukee, we're all over the place, and I'm bringing in two guys that are really important to me on the beat, given they make me a lot more informed. I listen to their stuff. I read their stuff. I'm all over it. We have Adam McAlvey of MLB.com. We have J.R. Radcliffe of The Microbrew, and of course, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Guys, here we are again, playoff, you know, team that we're covering. And, you know, I think that this has become old hat for all of us. And now I wanted to get the meetings of the minds together to talk a little bit more about the Brewers.
Minds, yes.
I appreciate you laying that on. You laid that on so thick, Dom, so thick. I don't know if we make you a lot smarter, but it is. This is definitely the time of year we're all waiting for. So this is fun.
Yeah, let's just bring everybody together. Everybody's fired up about this. So let's just start with the elephant in the room. We're recording this on Thursday afternoon. Cubs and Padres haven't played yet. We don't know the opponent. There may be a little bit of opponent stuff in here, but I think we both have been asked a million times, you know, all of us, who do you would rather play? Who do the Brewers would rather play? To me, it's a toss-up. I think they're both very quality teams. And after seeing Mason Miller, what he did yesterday, I'm like, I don't want to face that guy.
Mine is not a toss-up. Mine is easy, and it's completely for my own ease of life. I mean,
yeah,
and everyone can guess which one that is, but it doesn't matter because you take whatever outcome, whatever opponent you get. And I think from a base, people keep asking, like, do the Brewers have a preferred? I really don't think they do. I mean, you just play the game that's in front of you. That was a Craig Counsell lesson, actually. It's like, don't sweat the schedule, because when you do that in baseball, it makes you crazy. And you just don't know what team you're going to encounter at a certain time when you catch them on the schedule. Think of how the Brewers caught hot teams down the stretch. That we didn't necessarily see coming. So I don't know. I think everyone thinking, I'm sure people in the front office who are preparing for these different scenarios have a preference, but I really don't think it's worth sweating too much over.
What you got, JR?
I was really surprised when I did a kind of a fan poll. Do you want to see the Cubs or do you not want to see the Cubs? I thought most people would say no. I mean, if I'm looking at it from a fan, I wouldn't want Cubs fans overrunning American Family Field. So I was kind of under the assumption most people would be like, no, we don't want anything to do with the Cubs. In fact, we want them to lose and be done and be out. 50-50 though, like literally one vote separated the yeses and the noes in terms of what they wanted to see. And a lot of people, Adam brought up Craig Counsell. A lot of people want to see Craig Counsell go at the hands of the Milwaukee Brewers. So a lot of bring it on, you know, would love to see that rivalry, you know, a first time playoff meeting between the two franchises. Would love to see that rivalry kick up a notch. I personally still would think I'd rather see the Padres, only because I saw how well the Cubs defense is able to take away what the Brewers do well. And that's a lot of infield singles, a lot of, you know, putting pressure on, getting guys on, taking the extra base. You know, when you have a Dansby Swanson, Nico Horner, Pete Crow Armstrong up the middle, it doesn't get a lot better than that. And I do think that would be a problem for the Brewers. But like you said, it is about when you play them. And you know, at this point, every team is good. Every team has strengths. The Padres bullpen is unquestionably the best in baseball. Probably don't want to deal with that either. So it is sort of just, you know, like, get in there and let it ride. And you know what? Maybe the Cubs fans don't take over American Family Field. They, you know, the Brewers fans have had advance notice that they are in the NLDS, that they've been able to buy up the tickets. And yes, a lot of them are going to get sold, but there's a pretty healthy chunk that won't too. So maybe it's not quite as bad as we think it is. And, you know, if it's the Padres, they're a completely different team, completely different strengths and weaknesses, but still something that the Brewers will have to deal with as well. So it is probably a 50-50 toss-up.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm just rooting for everybody to have fun.
Oh, no, you're not. No one wants that. That's not
you know, it could be like the Darren Revell meme. Like, I feel bad for our country, but this is tremendous content. Like, I could feel bad for Milwaukee County, but this is tremendous content if it's Brewers Cubs. But we'll cross that bridge when we get there. If the Cubs, you know, if it's Cubs or Padres, it doesn't impact the game times. The game that actually impacts Brewers game times is actually Red Sox-Yankees later tonight. So if the Red Sox win that series, the Brewers are playing night games, at least the first two is what it's scheduled anyway. 8:08 on Saturday, TBD for Monday, but likely a night game. Saturday would be an 8:08 if the Red Sox win. But if the Yankees win, it's a 1:08 on Saturday. So that's just something to get out in front of here at the start. Once we, you know, maybe by the time you're listening to this, you know what time that they are playing. So the idea, as you may have seen on the title, if you're listening, is Just three things. This is something that I think sometimes we overanalyze and get locked in on, you know, roster predictions and, you know your foe, and we'll have all that content too, but just three things that are burning on our minds as we get ready to watch the Brewers go into the postseason again. And I think that the way that this is going to roll with us guys is we all have different perspectives. We've seen the team on a daily basis all season long. You know, just what are the things that, like, huh, I wonder if, or just sort of, this could be something to monitor is the goal of all of this for listeners and for fans watching. So I'll just kick it to you, Adam. What's the first thing that you're looking out for this postseason?
One thing I want to say at the beginning is when you watch a team every day, you see the warts. And it's much easier to see the warts than to see whatever the opposite of a wart is, the beauty. And I think fans fall into that where they get on social media and like complain about base running outs or the third base coach is the ultimate example of this. And the Brewers happen to have a very good third base coach in Jason Lane. So it hasn't been like a huge issue this year, but you see the mistakes and you don't watch other teams make mistakes too. Okay. So that's my like warning. If I seem like nervous Nelly ahead of all of this stuff,
of course.
But to me, the number one thing is that they finished 19-21. And they, you know, over their last 40 games, that's from the day that the winning streak snapped in Cincinnati, the winnable game. But remember, the bullpen was like super taxed and they tried to win it with Tobias Myers and Grant Anderson. And then the rest of the way, like there was that big Cubs series next, but then the Brewers kind of kept it close. The Cubs picked up a game. I mean, the division was essentially won at that point. And Pat Murphy has talked so much in the last couple of weeks to try to, I think, calm everybody, including maybe himself, including maybe his players, that when you take away like that, the way the Cincinnati Reds had to play to get into the postseason, when you take that away, it's really hard to fake that. You cannot drum up urgency when there is none. You know, really, that there is none. So look, it's not that they didn't try down the stretch. It's not that they didn't, you know, that they coasted. It's not that they packed in the bats. It's just that that urgency was not there. And now the trick is, after a week of faking games at American Family Field empty, it felt like COVID ball there the other day. Mm-hmm. They're trying to fake it as best they can. Now, all of a sudden, you're supposed to flip the switch and play games where every single out, every play, every inning is critical to surviving, especially in a best of five series. That is a really hard challenge for me, and I think it's the biggest challenge because look, I think back to 2021 where they threw that no-hitter in Cleveland. They were way up and they went to Detroit and played poorly, and then they stopped hitting the rest of the way. Like they coasted to the finish, they rested a ton of guys, and they came into the Braves and they played the same way. They didn't hit and they were out. A team that was really good. That 2021 Brewers team is underappreciated. That was a World Series caliber team, and the Braves won the World Series. So that to me is a huge worry. And I'm rambling, but just 19-21. In that stretch, they were fourth in team ERA, which actually surprised me. Mm-hmm. So the pitching was still really good. But offensively, 21st in slugging, 26th in home runs. They hit 35 homers in their last 40 games. And I'm sure we'll get into like power and the importance of that in the postseason, but they just didn't hit homers down the stretch. And now they're supposed to flip the switch. So I think that is a big issue here.
That's totally fair. I think a lot of fans share that same sentiment of just how do you create urgency when there isn't any? And you're right. Like you go from 0 to 60, you're going to, you know, break your transmission on your car. And how do you do that in, you know, the blink of an eye, given the Cubs are going to be playing a do or die game or the Padres, whomever they end up facing, is something to monitor. JR, what do you got for your first thing?
You know, thinking about 2021, it's hard to shake the idea, just to kind of riff on what Adam is saying, that this isn't the same thing that we've seen year after year after year, where the team is certainly good enough. They were a 90-win team regularly at this point, and that's incredible. What an incredible place to be in. And by virtue of just being that good, you know they can win the World Series anytime they set foot into the playoffs. But the offense just doesn't function like other offenses. You just don't have mashers. And that's obviously okay. Like their on base percentage is the best in baseball. Their OPS is fine. Some of that is propped up, I think, by having the August that they had. But, you know, when it comes down to brass tacks You know, I think you never want to get into the small samples, but Los Angeles Dodgers, Teoscar Hernandez wasn't that great this year, but then he goes and hits a couple bombs in the playoffs. Like they have that capability in them. Pretty much everybody in the Dodgers lineup has that capability in them. Tommy Edman too, who had a rough year and then hits a home run. Like, do the Brewers have those guys? Because in 2021, they did not. They had Rowdy Tellez and nobody else hitting the ball, driving the ball when it got to that point of the season. They had Tyrone. They've hit home runs. Tyrone Taylor hit a home run. Obviously, last year, the home runs were the big moments. You know, you had two from Jackson Churio and Garrett Mitchell, and that's what kept them in those games. But again, without those
Jake
home runs.
Jake Bowers.
Yes. Bowers, Frelick, back-to-back. Sal Frelick literally hit two home runs in the regular season and then hit one in the postseason. So it doesn't even need to be power hitters, but you do need that power. I know that this style works in the postseason. I believe that's true. But also offense just goes down. I've watched the Tigers for two games. They won their first game against Cleveland completely the way the Brewers win games. The other team made mistakes. They capitalized. They kept putting pressure on. They figured it out, and they got great pitching. And then game two, kind of the same offensive performance, and they didn't hit the bombs at the end. They didn't win. And I do feel like it's just a bigger piece of the puzzle, having that power component. And the Brewers just aren't built that way. And that's fine for the regular season. They've proven themselves to be right over and over and over. You know, they didn't get Eugenio Suarez at the deadline. And it's probably because they thought Caleb Durbin was better. And you know what? Since the trade deadline, Caleb Durbin has been better. He is the better offensive player than Suarez. That's incredible. Great call. Great call by the Brewers, if that's actually what they were calculating. You know, there's more to it than just simple player X versus player Y when they're evaluating this stuff. But they have been right about how they build their roster and how they have success. Does that work in the postseason? We'll probably never actually know, because the sample will just never be big enough to tell us for certain what truly works. It's never one thing. It's never an obvious stat that you can point to. But I wonder, if it doesn't work this time, will they change their approach a little bit? Will they go after guys, free agents? I mean, probably not. This is how they've operated year after year after year, and they keep winning more games. So who am I to say? But will they finally look at investing in somebody who's going to make a difference in the postseason? They're drafting a little bit more that way. You know, guys like Andrew Fisher and Brock Wilkin and Blake Burke, like, they're kind of looking for those corner infield mashers. Will they address that at the pro level and try to, you know, maybe go about it a little bit differently, knowing they might take a little step back regular season wise, but then when they get here, they have the guys that you're genuinely afraid of against some of the top pitchers in baseball.
To be devil's advocate, you know, I remember the line from Matt Arnold when they signed Rhys Hoskins saying, "I didn't think we were going to have access to a player like this," meaning they spent on Rhys, and look at it now. Rhys is on pretty much everyone's not on the roster projection. Now he got Wally pipped, I understand, but Andrew Vaughn hasn't hit a homer in over a month. And that's where that, okay, well, what would you rather have? They value defense, they value power. I feel like they have tried, but yet if a guy gets hurt, or even last year he went 0-for in the postseason, and then Jake Bowers pinch hits for him and delivers the hit. So it's just like, I get trying to spend on power, but some guys are, you know, just a little bit different. And I think that with the way that the Brewers are built, it is going to be that unexpected, where kind of like where we talked about South Korea, like two homers, right? And then it could be somebody like Blake Perkins. It could be somebody like Joey Ortiz, for goodness sakes. Like, it's going to be somebody we don't expect that delivers the power, in my opinion. My thing, though, it kind of comes back to all of the questions about health and about the last month or so, and this guy's been dealing with these questions all year, is William Contreras. Mm-hmm. And I think we're underrating the wrist. I personally am worried about the wrist, because he didn't have a hit in the three games after getting hit on the wrist. The bat speed was normal. So it's like, there's not like a tangible, oh my goodness, he dropped 3 miles an hour bat speed. But to see him catch that next night in San Diego, I'm just like, that's not right. I just don't see it. And now, hopefully this break gets him right. But you may recall, he DH'd game three last year of the wild card because his knee was that messed up. And I think that was one of those things that he didn't want to talk about. And we understand that's how William sort of is. He's this bulldog, but it's just like, you know, even Pat Murphy's a little coy about what he's dealing with. And I think of Will Smith over with the Dodgers. You know, he thought he was going to play through it. Then it turns out it's a hairline fracture. I'm not saying that William has a hairline fracture, but I think it's more than a contusion, and relying on him for offense is going to be really important to monitor.
Yeah, look, spell that out in case people missed this. The Brewers had a little availability for us on Tuesday before their first workout back from a one-day break. And it was Todd Rosiak, our friend, who asked Murph for like an update on William, and because he had gone for further testing on that wrist hand. It's kind of like right on the outside of the wrist where it meets the hand, and had asked him about it. And Murph said, let's call it a contusion. And to Todd's credit, he kind of followed up like, well, let's not call it a contusion. Can we actually know what it is? And Murph again said, well, if it was a break, I'd call it a break. Let's call it a contusion, which is still just an odd way to answer. And, you know, Murph was in a little punchy mood that day. They were trying to get the energy up for those games and or those workouts. So who knows exactly how to read that? But I agree with you. I think this is a big one. And look, you know, either way, William's going to play. But yeah. What version of William Contreras are they going to get? Because prior to that swing in St. Louis that hit him on the hand, he was really driving the ball. It was that gap power that was really had come back and changes the middle of their lineup, especially when Andrew Vaughn's not hitting for a lot of power. So I think this is a huge one, Dom, and I'm glad you mentioned that one.
Yeah, I think that's big. So I'm going to switch the order. I'm going to switch it back over to JR. Let's go to our second things now. What else is on your notebook here, JR?
Real quick, I'll point out, William Contreras only had 3 extra base hits in September, did not homer in September after 9 homers in August. You know, right. I remember when they brought Danny Jansen in and it was like, did that light a fire under him or something? Because he just started pounding the ball the night they brought Danny Jansen in and then sustained that through August. And then something went back south again, like it had maybe at the beginning of the season. So for me, I'm looking at, I think Jacob Mizorowski is fascinating here. And the way we're of course looking at it is he going to even make the postseason roster? But I think you could even go further and like, what's next for him, right? Like if he makes the roster, that's interesting all by itself. It means that they haven't lost faith in him despite a lot of, you know, difficult performances over the second half of the season where he was, I mean, in my mind, just not trustworthy to get outs. And they still believe in how special he is to put him in a spot where maybe he could go in and get some strikeouts in the middle of a game or work a couple, you know, maybe work multiple innings in the middle of a game. So that's obviously one of the big things I'm looking at. But, you know, the Brewers have been so good with pitching development and so good at bringing guys to the big leagues and kind of making them even better when they get to the big leagues. And I think Tobias Myers and Chad Patrick are a couple of recent examples. But in general, they have been so good at making guys better and then even another notch better when they get here. And for a little while, Mizorowski was awesome. And then he took this step back and they haven't really been able to right the ship with him. And I don't think that's enough of a sample to be a red flag about, you know, where he is or anything. But I do sort of wonder, like, you know, I think in a perfect world, you go into this offseason and Jacob Mizorowski is your number one starter. And maybe, you know, that leads into what you end up doing with Freddy Peralta. Do you trade him before he becomes a free agent, or, you know, can you not live without him and you keep him as your ace and Jacob Mizorowski is your number two? I think all of that is up in the air right now. It's all on the table. Like, is he even going to start in the big leagues next year if he can't show consistently that he can sort of recapture his command? He's had a lot of work this year, far more than he ever has before. You could easily say it's just a fatigue thing. It's a getting your feet wet. It's the bright lights, going to the All-Star game after 5 appearances. I mean, all of that plays into it. But ultimately, they want him to be a star, not just, you know, not just a guy who can come into the middle innings and pitch relief. So I think it's an interesting inflection point for him. And do they show him that confidence and put him on the roster and say, look, kid, we still really believe that you're going to be special for us. We want you to be part of this postseason picture. Let that be a springboard into what's going on next year too. And if they leave him off, how does that play into that? So interested on it in a number of levels. I mean, we just have not seen him come into a game. And yes, there's like one inning good or, you know, 2 innings good and then one bad. We just haven't seen it since the Dodgers start, maybe the Pirates start in the second half, but the Dodgers start like before the All-Star break against Kershaw when he was really good.
Right. To do it against a quality opponent is what you're looking for.
Right. That's exactly right. To me, there's not enough evidence. I don't think they can trust him, but I think there's a chance they still do because they don't have anybody else like him. He is really kind of one of one in terms of his stuff and his, I mean, truly the stuff is still baffling. Like, it's great. It just has to be harnessed or it's no good. So I'm very curious what happens next.
Do you think he's on the roster, Adam?
Yeah, based on asking this question of everybody who I could get my hands on over the last week, coaches, front office, little less from Murph, it's fair to say, I would, I
Yeah.
think. I think Miz has to prove it to the manager a little bit. But every indication I've got, and I wrote this yesterday for MLB.com to plug my own stories, try to get some
Do it.
Clicks away from JR.
I already plugged JS online. We're good. I hear you. We're one on one now.
We're all friends here.
But Jim Henderson, you know, Dom, just to spoil this, you're going to get eight things total today because Miz is the first thing I wrote down, and I'm not going to think on my feet to change. I'm just going to go with Miz.
Go for
it. So sorry to you. I do think he's in based on just the conversations I had, and Jim Henderson, looking at the optimistic view of this, is looking at what this could do for Mizorowski's future of coming in and contributing. And the way the Brewers look at it is, you know, I guess what I wrote is like, if Ke'Bryan Hayes had just like aimed that little swinging bunt in a better spot, right, and it goes back to Miz, and he's got like 2 1/3 or whatever clean in that lone relief appearance that they had, we'd be having a completely different conversation, I think, about what
can I counter and push back there is that he had the 9-hitter with the 2-strike count and a guy that was 0 for his last 16 and he walked him. Like, and then you face top of the order. So I think that's, if you give up just a swinging bunt run and then get out of there in the 9th inning, I think you're exactly right. We're having this conversation, Miz is on the roster. That's where I hesitate. I'm like, all right, it was just a swinging bunt. There's no reason for this to become a 5-run inning.
Yeah, but and that's been the rub on him is I don't want to get inside his head, and I don't want to criticize a 23-year-old rookie for the way he's comported himself, because he's done a good job. It's just hard pitching in the big leagues. But when something bad has happened, he has not shown the ability to brush it off and move on to the next. That's what the great pitchers do. And that's something he's learning on the job. And he's learning in front of like 40,000 fans in the middle of a race, which is really difficult to do. So I don't mean to criticize him by saying that, but I'm just saying that the coaches look at it like he did his job there.
Mm-hmm.
On that first batter.
Yes.
And then he did his job for two more innings. That middle part where it unraveled, and you know, before he issued that walk following the swing and bunt, it was 2-0 and it was two fastballs way wild. So just looked rattled. From the press box, he looked rattled. And that's what he's going to have to clean up. But look, I don't know. This could be my thing. Instead of Miz, I'll say Shelby Miller, because these are related. Losing Shelby Miller was a big deal that obviously got written about and talked about. I don't think it got talked about enough, because that was a big pickup at the deadline and a pitcher who really could have given them depth in that 6th, 7th, 8th area. And you could pick your spot, a really big spot, because he'd pitched those and has experience and is kind of that low heartbeat guy, power arm. I think Miz might get some of those spots, like a really big spot in the 6th inning where it's two on in a 1-run game or whatever.
So that's my follow-up then, like for both of you guys. Since I presume both of you have Miz on the roster, does Jacob Mizorowski pitch in the DS with the lead within 3 runs? Let's call it.
I'm going to say yes. Again, based on the conversations I've had with some of the coaches, I think that's how they envision him. And it's a mass. I've even asked the question, isn't that like a monstrous risk when, you know, you're just every game, especially in a 5-game best of 5 series, is so huge. But that power can really play in the postseason, and they think there's an opportunity to deploy him. Now, I might be totally wrong. And look, he might not even be on the roster. So nothing's set in stone until Saturday. But boy, I think we could see him in some big spots.
JR, what do you think on that question?
I think playoff baseball has evolved so much with the starting pitchers. You know, like, guys are going 3 innings, getting taken out, and you're not even thinking twice about it. Casey Mize got taken out after 3 innings, and he was pitching fine. You're going to need 6 relievers then to get through, 5 maybe, but to get through the rest of the game. With Nick Mears struggling, with Shelby Miller out, like Adam said, who else is there? Chad Patrick looked really good. Like, he's a possibility. Tobias Myers is a possibility. But you're going to need him, because you can't just go Koenig, Abner, McGill and get through the final 6 or, you know, 5 innings of a game. Ashby would be there too, of course, like, or another left-handed pitcher like Zastrzyzny maybe. Like, everybody's going to be called upon. So I agree that Mizorowski is going to be needed with the lead, protecting a lead. And, you know, you also kind of have to remember that there's no man on second base in extra innings. One of these games goes extra innings. It's not guaranteed to be over in 11 or 12. It could go till 15, 16. We saw that in 2018. Exactly. They went to an extremely long game. And if they win that game, everything changes. And I think there's a World Series there for the Brewers if they win that game. So you're going to need somebody who, and somebody stretched out like Mizorowski, maybe that wouldn't be a lead, but tied. I mean, high leverage at the very least. So yeah, if he's on the roster, he's not going to be mopping up. You can't afford to have somebody on a, you know, they're probably going to go 14 and 12. Like, they won't have the pitchers to have somebody designated as a, here's the guy, you know, although Aaron Civale's on the Cubs roster. And I think, I mean, the wild card series might be different. You're not going to have somebody on there who's just there for the games where you need to soak up innings. It's just not likely.
Yeah. And that leads me to my thing for this second time through is how many starters get 15 outs? I think that's my big question. How many starters get 5 innings? And I say 15 outs because we refer to it as out getters. And you do the math. If you get a 27 outs, right, your closer's got 3. And then that leaves, you know, if it's McGill, and that might be one of my things later. But the, you know, you look at it, closer, let's say it's McGill for the sake of this exercise, Uribe, Koenig, and Ashby. That's at least 12 outs right there. So you can have Ashby go multiple innings. You can have your starter needs to get 15 outs to avoid these situations that we're talking about. And I thought Murph had his hands tied last year when, you know, Freddie and Frankie struggled early in game one and game two, where it's like every game's an elimination game in theory, especially after you lose game one. Now, people forget Aaron Civale's mop-up work in game one, how important that was to set them up for game two and game three. But Tobias Myers gave them a chance to win with 5 innings of work in game three. Yes, it was 60-some pitches or whatever, but he emptied the tank. He did his job. They leaned on their bullpen. Does Freddie get 15 outs? Does Quinn Priester get 15 outs? I don't think Jose Quintana, if he's the starter in game three, is allowed to get 15 outs. I really wonder how much the Brewers are going to lean on their bullpen because, and I know, Adam, you heard me ask this question at the workout, where there was new data suggesting, especially in the playoffs, the more you see a reliever, it's the same effect as a starter, where we talk so much about, oh, the starter can't see a team third time through. It's so much, the numbers go up, and they do. But if you keep throwing your reliever out there every single time, if with all the off days, if Aaron Ashby gets 4 cracks at the lefty window of Ryan O'Hearn and Jake Cronenworth or Kyle Tucker and PCA, that third, fourth time, it's going to get a little more dangerous because they know the bag of tricks.
Yeah, I think in terms of just like the outs and the usage, everything sets up really well for what the Brewers need right now in terms of having these 5 days off. This is a team like on the pitching side really, really can benefit from this time and this rest. And then even that it's the NL this year that has that weird play game one off day, then play game two, then off day, then game three on the road. Mm-hmm. It's the right year for that to be the NL's turn for this team. And you mentioned McGill is a big one. All of those Mears and Uribe and Koenig too. They were in the top, 15 or so of, top 2 on the team and top 10 or 15 in the majors in terms of appearances. So that part of it, I think, shapes up really well for the Brewers to get this little extra bit of rest. And I think it's going to be 12 pitchers, 14 position players.
I do too.
When that roster comes out. That's what they've been talking about. And I think they're going to err because of the question about Jose Quintana, for example, even Quinn Priester, if it's a certain matchup, probably more with the Cubs, with the lefties. You know, do they ask a little less of Quinn Priester? They're going to want that extra arm in the bullpen. So I think that the schedule part of this really plays in the Brewers' favor if you're going to dig into it.
Yeah, I agree with all that. So let's round into our third thing. Adam, I'll have you start us off of your third thing to monitor for the Brewers.
Well, maybe I'm stealing yours because mine was just health. And Trevor McGill is like number one there because, as you said, Nick Mears, who was fabulous early, has been here and there in the second half a little bit. I think a couple of his recent outings have been pretty encouraging, the way he's thrown the ball, and that would be a really big one for the Brewers if he's able to kind of step up. Remember, he was hurt going into the postseason last year, came back and had one or two appearances and was kind of an unknown about being on the wild card series roster, then made it and actually I believe he was the pitcher of record in game three if Devin Williams gets the three outs. I think Nick Mears would have won game three.
It would have been Freddie, I believe, would have been the pitcher of record.
Okay, well, forget that.
Nonetheless.
Edit that part out and make
nonetheless,
it seem like
he pitched an important multi-inning outing.
Thank you very much. That's exactly what I said.
Yes.
No, I just think health. And again, I just think the way the schedule worked out, like this bye is very dicey. And a lot of our questions to Pat Murphy on Tuesday and really even during the final regular season series was making the most of this week. And these teams, it's so fascinating how different teams have different outlook on this. The Phillies filled their stadium. I don't know if people saw that last night, but they at least the bottom couple of levels. And it was this incredible atmosphere, and they played this scrimmage. It was this celebratory atmosphere, and players are like saluting the fans and the stands, and it looked like a lot of fun. We have not been there for Wednesday and Thursday's workouts at American Family Field. Those are closed to the press. Tuesday, we were there for like a little simulated thing that they did. I don't know how you guys felt. It was not... The energy was like from the guys giving Charlie Green a hard time about calling balls and strikes. There was not a lot of energy in the place. It was a very 2020 feeling. Now, that may be exactly what they need. And Pat Murphy's feeling was that that may be the best thing for this group, that getting in front of fans didn't feel authentic to him, didn't feel like the right move. So you got to trust. I mean, he certainly has a feel for the pulse of his club. But I don't know. The health aspect, I think, as challenging as that bye is for the hitters, it's huge for the pitchers. And I think as a run prevention team, that is a positive, a net positive for this Brewers team.
Yeah. JR, what do you got?
You know, Christian Yelich, it's easy to forget, wasn't here last year because he was hurt. He missed the wild card game in 2019. You know, he hasn't. I will never forget his home run kicking off game seven of the NLCS against Los Angeles back in 2018, 7 years ago now. And he hasn't had a lot of, like, you know, 2020 was its own weird thing. And you know, obviously the Brewers missed a chance in the NLDS in 2021, but like he hasn't been able to do that, to recreate that. And I feel like he absolutely can. I should have run these numbers, but to look and see if the Brewers have ever had a season as good as this from a player that old, you know, probably some of those later Robin Yount seasons were that good, but like his numbers for somebody his age were really quite spectacular. I don't think we realize that he's that much of an elder statesman because you don't, you know, you look at him and he just still looks young and in some cases still plays young. So I don't think we think of him as an old man by any means. And he's, you know, compared to us, he's certainly not an old man, but, I you know, maybe this is his time to sort of rediscover it. How cool would that be? How cool would it be if he's the guy that gives them the power when they need it? Just fell short of 30 home runs this year, which I thought, you know, was it would have been a cool milestone, but like really impressive. You know, that's how many home runs Willie Adames hit this year with San Francisco is an even 30. So like he's still producing at such a high level. And I do think we started to take him for granted. William Contreras is probably the best player on this team in the eyes of most people, or Jackson Churio has moved into that category or will shortly move into that category. And you forget that Yelich is still really productive. So great story from Kurt Hoag last week. I think Adam had a story too about Christian Yelich and sort of his, I'm sorry, I did not mean to do that to you. Oh yeah, Adam maybe had a story too. I did not mean to do that to you. Yelich is just so interesting. Like when he talks as a philosopher, you know, he's got the philosopher in him, and every time he has a long conversation, it's interesting. You know, he's got, I think, a really good outlook on baseball. And I think he just really wants this more than people realize for the city. You know, nobody on that team has the big picture in mind the way that he does. Maybe Brandon Woodruff or Peralta, they've been here a long time. Murph has been here a long time. But, you know, Yelich has really seen this thing built into a power from really day one of his arrival. And so I think there might be a special moment in there. You know, like if you believe this team is going to the World Series, Christian Yelich is going to come up big. He's just going to be in the middle of everything. And maybe one last thought is, will he be the leadoff hitter? Because the last five games of the season, he was at the top of the lineup, kind of an interesting experiment. It seems like Pat Murphy would be willing to do that in the postseason. Isn't clear if that's what's going to happen, but that would certainly be one of the choices Murphy can make that has a pretty dramatic impact on what happens next.
Yeah,
I think he will be the leadoff hitter, Dom. I mean, you were in there for those sessions where we were asking about that. You're the one who was praised by Pat Murphy for being so insightful about what putting Yelich one does for Ortiz at nine.
Yeah, every time I think about this, I think it is also starter dependent. This is assuming they're facing a righty, because if they're facing a lefty, I think Churio's leading off. But I think that if Yelly is leading off in the postseason, it signals two things. Number one, that Bryce is going to be the guy that they're going to focus on. Like, Bryce is going to see lefties. Bryce is going to be the, all right, they're going to circle his number in the lineup card to get that guy out. Like, they'll live with Yelich because he's leading off. He's majority not going to be batting with runners on, that sort of thing. And the second thing that it signals to me is that they would be much quicker to pinch hit for Joey than they did at the end of the regular season. I think that, you know, we talk about the dynamic of the nine hitter and the one hitter, and, you know, maybe there's lineup protection there. You know, there's more with Yelich than, with all due respect to Sal or Bryce in the leadoff spot, that you've got somebody that can draw a walk or hit the ball over the fence batting behind a guy that has had trouble with runners in scoring position all season long. So if all of a sudden here comes Jake Bowers and you're in a window where it's a righty, right? You know, think of the bottom of that order where it's, you know, Durbin and then Ortiz and then top of the order where your righty is supposed to get that window. If Durbin gets on, you bring in the lefty Bowers and it's like, okay, you better get Bowers because Yelly's on deck and you suddenly have the advantage. That's something that I certainly agree with and I look out for if he's leading off. And I think by all indications, he's going to be, right?
I agree. I think so. And I think that brings up to go back to the kind of original where we started talking about the way they finished. One thing Pat Murphy has sort of reminded us from time to time is the way we're managing these games over the last couple of weeks, particularly over the final week, is not the way they are going to manage the games in the postseason. And I think people think of the pitching when that comes to mind, but I think it has a lot to do with the position players as well. You know, do you start Ortiz? Do you maybe start Mona here and there in the right matchup and then bring in Ortiz late as like the defensive finisher? I think there's going to be some moves on the position player front, where he deploys pinch hitters, how he uses his defenders, that surprise us a little bit and look a lot different from what they did in the regular season. And that requires the players to kind of buy in. And Murph has talked about that a little bit, about kind of the way they've played and the way they've kind of been an unselfish type of team is going to come into play in the postseason. And I think Yelich has talked about this a little bit, where he had some really interesting stuff. This wasn't in our chat with Kurt and I, but this was a couple of weeks ago where he was talking about one of the things that's made the Brewers so good is that they have young players who can like take it when you give them hard criticism, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that's not a given at this level. Like, I think people think like that's a given. These are professional players. Sometimes egos are a lot different at the major league level than when Pat Murphy was at ASU or Notre Dame, but it hasn't changed. So he'll just go up and tell Sal Frelick what it is. I'll never forget the time last year at Wrigley Field where the young guys had just a really bad game against the Cubs. We're standing there waiting for whoever in the clubhouse. And here comes Pat Murphy into the middle of the clubhouse with all the reporters standing there and starts coaching up this group of young guys. It was Sal and Bryce Terang and Ortiz. And it was like, whoa, like, is this really happening right in front of our eyes? He just doesn't have a filter for that kind of stuff. And the players, the type of players they have, are able to sort of like be okay with that. So anyway, I think there's going to be some moves that they're not going to worry necessarily about feelings and what a guy did to get him here and make the move for right now. And I do think that there's going to be some eye-opening switches involved in that.
Yeah, and that leads me to my thing, but do you want to follow up on that, JR?
Yeah, I just, so tangential to that, or not tangential, but directly related. I think Andre Monasterio is going to have a much bigger role in this postseason than anyone realizes right now. And you could not have told me that before the season, and there's no way I thought Andre Monasterio would be on a postseason roster.
Like, but Andre Monasterio was optioned to keep room for Oliver Dunn and Vinny Capra coming out of spring training.
Yeah.
Think about that for a second.
Well, Durbin sent down too, which looks mind-blowing at this point, but like, yes, Andre Monasterio was just a just-in-case guy, and he had a great season, great offensively. Unquestionably, Joey Ortiz is the better option defensively. There's no secret. But, like, Joey Ortiz just really, in some cases, can't hit. I mean, he is actually a really good hitter with runners on base, and then the bases get loaded, and somehow he comes up in every situation 5 for 30 with three doubles, a homer, and like one walk, I think, no sacrifice flies, which blows my mind. I don't even know how that's possible in 30 bases loaded at bats. I don't know if it's too much pressure or it's just the sample or whatever, but like, you're not going to be able to run with that all nine innings. And so Monasterio is going to be in some huge spots. He's going to have to make some huge plays in seventh, eighth, and ninth innings that I don't think people are aware of. So buckle in. I mean, he's had a great season to this point and has built up a ton of goodwill. And I do think he's capable of coming up big in a moment or two, but you know, storyline to watch for sure.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying is, what if it's Mona first and then it's Ortiz late for defense?
That leads me to my third thing, the defensive alignment. What are the Brewers going to do in left field? What are the Brewers going to do at shortstop? What are the Brewers going to do in center field? Because everything is connected. And on the Mona Ortiz front, you know, I did some, when we were talking about Yelly leading off, and I wrote an article on WTMJ.com about the fact that the Brewers' eight hitters in the month of September, the guy who bats eighth, has the best on-base percentage by 30 points at the time of writing in baseball, because teams want to face Joey Ortiz. Like, they're, mm-hmm. All right, I'll pitch around. I don't care who it is. There's an out. And that's alarming in the postseason. But then you flip it on the other side. I know we love Monasterio and consider him a strong defender. There have been moments at shortstop with him. I think of that Toronto series. He did make a couple of great backhanded plays. Then there was a vacant bag at second that him and Bryce collided on. There was a lack of communication and shallow left on a pop-up with him and Durbin that they collided on. But yet, you see him make that brilliant play with Koenig in St. Louis when he's playing first base of all places, and that you have a shortstop playing first. So I think Mona's value comes from his versatility. He is going to get into the game. And I think that's the reason he's not going to start. And I think they're going to start Joey, because in the event, let's say Joey comes up every time with the bases empty and two outs, there's no reason to pinch hit for him there. And you never get to this opportunity where you have to say, oh, we need to pinch hit, you know, keep Mona available on the bench. Well, let's say Andrew Vaughn is the tying run in the eighth inning and he leads off with a single. You got to have Brandon Lockridge go out there and run for him. And then, you know, if Bowers is already in the game or if Bowers has already been used, you have Mona available to be that third first baseman that we've seen him be able to do so. So that's why I think Joey is going to start, because this team values defense so heavily. And on that front, it's left field is the big question for me. Isaac Collins in the second half has not been the same defender. And furthermore, Churio is a worse than league average center fielder by the defensive metrics. And the way I see it is, again, the Brewers have to pull the levers, as we've heard them say over and over, where if you pull the lever on defense a little lower to put Churio in center, does that increase the lever of offense that Collins being in left and, you know, Churio in center, or even Bowers in left over Collins, depending on the opponent? Are they okay with that lever, you know, changing from the defense to the offense heading into the postseason? Because we know Joey's going to be the starting shortstop, in my opinion. But what happens in left field? You know, Collins and Bowers are graded as similar left fielders, which was not the case in the first half of the season. Blake Perkins obviously has had a rough year with the bat. He's much better as a right-handed hitter than a lefty. So if they're facing a left-handed starter, maybe Perkins gets the start and Churio moves to left. But I think for a team that values defense as much as they say they do, I think that's going to be put to the test in October, because you just need to score more runs than the other team. That's the only thing that matters.
Well, you saw him playing around with that, right? In the last couple of weeks, where if you were really watching, you saw, you know, they did the Perkins for a long time in center, and almost regardless of what the pitching matchup was, they were trying these different things. And then Bowers got out there and Collins got out there and had that kind of devastating game against the Reds. I've got Perkins in center and Churio in left. That's my, just regardless of the pitcher, I think that's the most likely alignment. And I think it is valuing defense. And it gives Blake Perkins a really cool opportunity. Just like we're talking about Joey Ortiz. Watch one of those guys like hit 400 in a short series or come up with like the big double that you don't expect. That's the beauty of kind of hitting the reset button at this time of the year, is a guy like that, if he sticks keeps his head down and keeps going. You like wipe the stats away and you kind of start over. That can be really powerful for a guy like that. So I think of Orlando Arcia hitting homers in the postseason where none of us saw that coming. And all of a sudden he's like one of their leading power hitters in franchise history in the postseason.
Uni SC Betancourt.
But I do think the way they were tinkering with that defensive alignment and thinking about it, and I think run prevention is going to be the primary driver of many of their decisions moving forward.
JR, anything to add?
I was just thinking of something, and it's unrelated to all of this. Let's say they get into the NLCS, and it's Philadelphia, and it's they got three great left-handed relief starting pitchers in that rotation. Would they really not put Rhys Hoskins on the roster and have him sit against his old team with a team full of lefty starters? Would they really not?
And lefties in the bullpen.
100%. Strom's coming out every game. I guess the bigger picture there is, because that is obviously a big question here, what's going to happen with Rhys Hoskins? Are they going to use him? Or you mentioned Lockridge. Are they going to basically choose speed over a right-handed power bat, albeit a right-handed power bat who got like 10 at bats when he came back from injury over the course of 3 weeks, many of them ending in strikeouts. It wasn't very effective. Clearly they didn't feel like they needed to use him either because they don't like necessarily value him very highly on the hierarchy right now, or because, you know, he's a veteran and they just didn't need to. I don't know. I think it's probably more the former, but this 2-year deal that they signed him to, I thought was a great deal at the time. I was really quite interested in the fact that they went after a guy that made a lot of sense coming off an injury. So a little bit of a discount, excellent fit for what they were looking for. They absolutely needed that production at first base, and it hasn't worked out. And I don't think there's injuries in there. There's maybe some bad luck. I don't know, but you know, it just hasn't worked out. And back to my initial point about, will it change their strategy in the offseason? This one could take it the other way. Will they say to themselves, look, we did that. We did what you wanted us to do. We went after the best guy on the market for what our needs were. It didn't work out. Why would we do that again? Because the guy that we picked up for Aaron Civale, who was a flyer from the Chicago White Sox, outperformed, you know, what you would have expected from Rhys Hoskins. So like, why wouldn't we just do more of those, you know, and find what sticks on the wall instead of going after the big fish? Probably something they're thinking about right now. And, you know, that's for future seasons, I guess, to consider with the obvious short-term thing of, will Rhys be on the roster? I think the answer is obvious, not obviously, but I think it's probably no, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I think they sort of told us the way they were leaning by.
Yeah.
Just look at his game by game log after he
yes,
came back.
You're right. Yes.
Yeah. One start since coming back. Yeah. That was not expected by anybody, I don't think, in that. I think he understands the assignment. I think he understood, you know, hey, that dude's hitting. I wouldn't take him out either. And then Jake started hitting. It's like, you got to find room for him because you need some lefty pop on this team. And Bryce had a great August, you know, didn't have the same power in September. Yelly's Yelly. But what other lefty pop do you have? And Bowers can certainly fill that role. But, man, it's going to be fun. I can't believe that we're covering another postseason. For a lot of experienced Brewer fans that understand that, like, I know the playoff rules are different and everything, but to say 7 out of 8 is really nuts to wrap my head around in a three-peat for the division that turned out to be the second best division in all of baseball, given only one other team or one other division had three teams make the postseason, and that was the AL East, that's what the AL East is supposed to do. So the fact that the NL Central had three teams make the postseason, the Brewers won that division, should not be lost. And of course, best record in baseball, first time since 82. And the way I've been viewing it, guys, is if not now, then when? So here's to a long October, right?
I'm old enough to remember when getting over 500 was a huge deal. And like Damian Miller and Jeff Jenkins were the heroes that got them over 500. And then I'm old enough to remember when they made the postseason and Solomon Torres went all WWE on us, marching back and forth across the stage at Summerfest, and what a big deal that was. And that's why when they clinched, I tried to write about, like, this is not normal for franchise history. And Dom, you're right. Like, more teams make the postseason. It's not the elite achievement that it once was, but it is still a really good achievement. And to stack it year after year, the way that they run the team with the long term in mind and not just throwing everything in and then being god awful for 5 years afterwards if it doesn't work out. They've sustained something really special and unique here that a lot of us old timers No, is not the way it was for many years here. So the fact that we're arguing about postseason game times, and that's our biggest concern, is a pretty special thing if you talk to people who are fans in the 90s.
Yes, I am one of those fans who brought a Walkman wherever I was in 2005 because they were going into Pittsburgh and only needed one win to clinch a 500 season. And in 2008 with Torres, you will wait no more. Great.
That's the best.
Great moment. I think it goes without saying, human nature, like, fans are used to this now, and it's understandable. I think that they would want something a little bit more. 7 out of 8 is great, but it's been 7 years since they won a playoff series. I do think you saw it in the attendance over the course of the season. They were trending toward like 17th, 18th in baseball in attendance. That's not where they finished. Second half, they were up to 12th, which is about as good as the smallest market in baseball can do. They've been top 10, you know, pre-COVID. That has happened, but like 12th is really dang good. And I think if they win a playoff series, this town, it's like on fire immediately. I remember the electricity in 2018 when they were in the NLCS. And I know that one playoff series is all it's going to take to reactivate that. So I think that first step, beating the Cubs or the Padres, will re-energize this fan base. I think even if that's where it ends, you're going to see higher attendance numbers next year. But in the short term, like, man, don't you just want to see it? Like, go back to that level, to that NLCS, and who knows, maybe even beyond, and what that would do for the city of Milwaukee. It's a pretty special time when the Brewers are clicking.
October's
the
best.
When Ray Montgomery came in here with the Angels, we went over there and just caught up with him a little bit. He said when he first saw Chris Taylor in an Angels uniform, he went up to him and he was like, man, why'd you have to make that catch? Why'd you have to do that? Like, how different is the story of the last 7 years if Taylor doesn't make that catch? The Brewers win that game on Yelich's homer, as JR said, and they go to the World Series in 2018. I don't know. Who knows? But, man, that catch is just haunted.
That's why we play the game
for so long. So winning a postseason series would be a pretty big deal.
Yeah, I think that's what every fan feels, and that's what everyone's looking out for. And again, like I said, best record in baseball. If not now, then when? You know, they've been the hot team coming in like they were in 18. They've been the team that backed in like in 19. Granted, injuries involved. They were the team that coasted in 21. I mean, they've done everything. So one thing left to do, as the movie line goes. But guys, I can't thank you enough for joining us here for a little, you know, crosstalk, a little meeting of the minds between MLB.com and the Journal Sentinel. Appreciate what you guys do to cover this team all season long. And like I said, I mean, truly, I listen to you guys' stuff. I listen, I read and everything. And I think most informed fans would agree that you guys are the best of the best, and appreciate you joining us here on the flagship.
Sure. I'm going to go read that Yelich story that Kurt Hoge wrote that
I am so sorry I sold you out. I feel terrible. No, about that.
I'm really looking forward to it. Really, I'm excited about it. Thanks.
Sorry.
Adam Calvi, JR.
You know I love you.
Thank you, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
See you, Dom.